Now, is it a peacock? Is it an Air India flight to New Delhi? No, it's the completely unauthorised Hindi Superman. Superman takes flight in Bollywood entirely without the permission of DC Comics. Mild-mannered Ian Smith of King's College London, one of our new intake of new generation thinkers, spends a lot of his time thinking about these unofficial mutations of American heroes. You might have heard him on this programme a few weeks ago, talking about the shameless copyright infringements of the Turkish Star Wars. In his postcard tonight, he tells us about caped crusaders who fight crime across the world and do so without respect for anyone's intellectual property.
Let's start with a trivia quiz. Which country has made the largest number of Batman films? Sorry, that was a bit of a trick question. It is obviously the US. As cultural historian Jeffrey Brown has argued, the superhero film is a quintessentially American genre. So it's no surprise that the Caped Crusader has appeared in more films made in America than any other country. But interestingly, the country that has made the second largest number of Batman films is the Philippines. From the 1960s onwards, this former US colony produced a whole series of unlicensed Batman films, including Fight Batman Fight, Batman Fights Dracula, in which Batman really does fight Dracula, a rock and roll musical called Alias Batman and Robin, and the one I particularly love, James Batman, in which James Bond and Batman fight crime together in Manila. The film featured local comedian Dolphy in both roles, recreating the Sean Connery-era Bond and the Adam West-era Batman. And it even uses the same theme tune. As Robin might have said, "Holy copyright infringement, Batman." But these kinds of unofficial reworkings of Batman were not limited to the Philippines. In 1968, the Mexican director René Cardona produced La Mujer Murcielago, The Batwoman, featuring a bikini-clad Batwoman battling a power-crazed evil scientist. In 1973, there was a Turkish reworking of Batman, in which he becomes a promiscuous, gun-toting anti-hero. There was even an Italian porn version of Batman, produced in 1982. And please do not Google that. You do not want those images in your head. What I find most interesting about this global phenomenon of Batmania are the questions it raises about globalisation. Theories of globalisation have traditionally positioned the spread of American popular culture as a threatening force, one that dominates over local traditions and smooths out cultural diversity. There are various negative terms for this global dominance of American culture, including Americanization, McDonaldization, Disneyfication, and my personal favourite, Coca-colonization. These terms evoke the image of American fast food chains slowly turning every high street in the world into a replica of the US. We are never far from a Big Mac, a can of Coke, or a Starbucks. But what is happening with these international reworkings of Batman is slightly different. These are not Hollywood studios setting up Batman franchises in countries around the world, but instead filmmakers from those countries appropriating those recognised Hollywood characters and making their own versions, with little regard for international copyright laws. And they're making changes for those local contexts. Perhaps the national industry that best demonstrates that is India. While Batman was the US superhero that inspired filmmakers in the Philippines, it was Superman that took hold in India. There have been many Superman films made throughout the Indian subcontinent, from the all-powerful Hindi language industry of Mumbai through to the tiny Marathi industry of Malagaon. But perhaps the most interesting Indian Superman came in the fantastically productive Telugu language industry in 1980. Starring the hugely popular film star N.T. Rama Rao, this incarnation of Superman doesn't derive his powers from being an alien from the planet Krypton, but instead he is gifted his powers by the Hindu god Hanuman. And while he wears the immediately recognisable red and blue Superman costume, the iconic S is replaced with an H for Hanuman. This quintessentially American superhero has been adapted and transformed for really quite a different cultural context. So the international spread of superheroes is not simply a tale of American cultural domination, but but it's also one of cross-cultural dialogue and adaptation. Now, of course, we shouldn't forget that these processes of exchange are not equivalent or balanced. They rely on American soft power and economic influence. But they do represent an exchange between American popular culture and other national traditions. A process which may be an asymmetrical dialogue, but a dialogue nonetheless.
Thank you very much, Ian. Another exploration of the blurry edges of culture. I'm fascinated by the way in which these cultures might have taken up these stories and used them as their own. Could we talk about Superman first? Because Superman, as any readers of Rabbi Weinstein's excellent book on the subject, Up, Up and Oy Vey, is a kind of Jewish story, a Jewish American story written as a kind of campaign against anti-Semitism. So what happens when you take a story like that that has quite a specific set of cultural resonances and transport it to India and translate it there?
Yeah, as you say, there's this kind of Jewish lineage going into the creation of Superman. There are innumerable numbers of people that have written like dissertations on Superman as a Christ figure and looked at it in those kind of religious terms.
He's totally Old Testament. I don't buy that at all.
And in fact, I think in many ways, it's one of the reasons why Superman became such an icon within Indian cinema is that he can be easily translated into this kind of mythological character. So unlike kind of Batman, who doesn't have those same kind of religious resonances, you can take Superman and you can add elements from Hindu gods. You can then change his entire back narrative.
So Hindu theology is a good fit for Superman and can adapt his stories to ensure that it has a kind of a place in all that and those stories still function. Do we then see the Philippines as a more secular culture because it's made friends with Batman, which is much more about politics? I mean, right-wing politics, very arguably. You could see something of Duterte, I imagine, might be a big fan of Batman, just as that horrible mayor figure from the Christopher Nolan Batman films is kind of a friend of the Ayn Rand individualist right.
Yeah, there's definitely a really interesting political resonance with Batman. I mean, I think there's also kind of pragmatic reasons. Often when they're taking Batman, it's the costume, it's the 1960s kind of camp version of Batman that is the one that is being used in these films. So even after the Tim Burton Batman came out in 89, the subsequent Filipino musical films starring Batman are all using the kind of camp 60s day-glow coloured version. So I think it might be pushing it a little far to read this as a kind of wider cultural resonance with arguably kind of vigilante right-wing politics. But I think there is definitely a clear difference in why this was taken up in the Philippines, especially in the 1960s, at a time coming out of US colonial control and kind of adopting American music, adopting American comic books and films, but then trying to find their own national identity within that space.
So if the Adam West version, the real version, I like to think of it as, his version of Batman is the one that crossed borders with the most energy, what does that tell us about how camp might travel? Watching Batman on TV in the late 60s, in your Andy Warhol wig with a copy of Susan Sontag's Notes on Camp is one kind of cultural experience. When that travels to somewhere like the Philippines, what happens? Are they reading it in the same kind of way?
Well, I think the way that audiences in the Philippines were treating Batman was very much as a kind of playful camp character. In the musical version, Alias Batman and Robin, you've got Batman singing 50s rock and roll songs, variations on Danny and the Juniors' At the Hop, variations on kind of Beach Boys classics, and it plays up the camp elements of those films and those songs. But one of the things I find really interesting is when that camp gaze is moving across cultures. So one of the things that one of my previous professors, Julian Stringer, had written about was the problematic Western camp gaze at Hong Kong cinema. He felt there was this kind of celebration of the camp, wonderful excess of Hong Kong martial arts films, but he also felt that there was something slightly condescending within that, that there was an element where audiences were laughing at as much as they were laughing with
in a
the
world
film.
Of Susie Wong kind of way.
Exactly, exactly. And so there's one of the things that's really interesting with the circulation of these films, the kind of Filipino Batman or the Indian Superman, is how they then get taken up as camp objects and are divorced from their original reception context and are just treated as objects of weird and wonderful fascination.
Ian Smith, whose postcard ends this edition of Free Thinking and sends me and my producer, Fiona McLean, back to the Batcave.